the crowd base that you should raise by the end of general. Last week we dealt with the quarterly report, financial report by the department on its performance. And today we're going to look at the matters raised in the annual report by the Auditor General on the progress the department has made in terms of the matters. Have they given attention to it, or full involvement, and so that it will raise its head again in the next financial year, the end of this financial year, year's audit report. So those are the issues that we're looking into. I just want to draw members' attention to the Mpumalanga report. As you will see, it was 86. Some members still owe us some inputs. I think it's Member Kopane. I don't know whether it's Member Mark, whoever, that is supposed to be added to the Mpumalanga report. Now, I've withdrawn that report because those issues are not on the report. Now, as luck would have it, the author of the report, Ms. Melissa Yongena, Nogena, is in Mpumalanga. She's assisting with the service delivery, ad hoc committee on service delivery issues oversight. So, she's not here today. So, I want to plead members in Belgium that we have this report stand over for the next committee meeting. That's fine with you. So without wasting any more time, the gentleman in the middle of the room is from the SABC, so he'll just be moving around. I'm going to give over to the representatives of the Children's Institute, who will obviously introduce themselves. I'm sure that they are no strangers to the committee. We've seen some of their work, and they've been here present, observing as observers before, and also as I think we saw them last year, in December, when they came to the committee. So, honourable members, I'm going to give over to the Children's Institute to take us through their presentation. They're going to comment on the regulations and also the minister's briefing that they gave to the committee in February. Over to you, ma'am.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson, and thank you, members, for again giving us this opportunity to address you. The Children's Institute is a research and advocacy institute at the University of Cape Town, and we've been working on the Child Support Grant for about 10 years. And we do this in partnership with many other civil society organizations, in particular the Black Sash and Access. Unfortunately, the Black Sash and Access can't be here today as they have other commitments. So what we're saying is also representative of their views on the Child Support Grant. We're going to be commenting on the December 2009 regulations, which introduced the extension of the grant to 18, and which also introduced a school enrollment and attendance requirement. And then as the minister came in on the 9th of February to this committee and presented on these regulations and answered many of the outstanding questions that the committee had and which civil society also had about the regulations. So the final regulations are generally a great improvement on the draft ones, and they are mostly all the questions are answered. But we're going to raise a few other areas of concern here that we are still a bit worried about with regards to those final regulations.
Would you please introduce yourself to the members?
Sorry, Chairperson. My name is Paula Proudlock. I'm the manager of the Child Rights Program at the Children's Institute, and this is my colleague, Lucy Jamison, the Senior Advocacy Coordinator at the Children's Institute. Okay, I'm going to be talking about two aspects of the regulation. The first is the age extension to 18, and the second is the school enrollment and attendance condition. I have the word condition in inverted commas because, as the minister herself said 2 weeks ago, we need to find a new word for this issue because it's not really a condition and it shouldn't be understood to be a condition, otherwise it could be implemented punitively. So maybe the committee could also think about a new way of calling this concept. So first I look at the age extension. Now the draft regulations which were gazetted for comments in December last year, they were designed in such a way that it would have resulted in children falling off the grant between the phases, because once they reached the cutoff age of 16 or 17, they would have fallen off, being without the grant for 5 months and had to reapply. And this is what happened with the first extension to 14-year-olds in 2003 to 2006. And we pointed this out in our submission to the department, and the department was also very aware of it and was trying to work out a way of avoiding the falling off problem. And so the final regulations that were gazetted in December are now a major improvement because they ensure that the child doesn't fall off. So once they're on the grant, they stay on until they're 18, which is great because it ensures that there's no break in the grant. And it also ensures a streamlined system for both officials and caregivers, so you don't have to have reapplications every year. The new regulations also have a cut-off birth date of the 1st of October 1994. So basically they say children born on or after the 1st of October 1994 qualify for the grant, and they'll stay on until they turn 18. We presented to the committee last year that we would have preferred a cut-off birth date of 1st of January 1994 or 1st of April 1994, which would have meant more children would be included in the grant, and would also mean that the 15-year-olds who are currently about or were about to fall off in January wouldn't fall off and could continue on the grant. This portfolio committee agreed with the principle that children shouldn't fall off and on, and you also recommended the 1st of January 1994 as your preferred date for the start of this grant. And when the minister then came to Parliament on the 9th of February, and she announced that the ministry and the department had decided to change that cut-off date according to what the committee had asked for, and the cut-off date is now the 31st of December 1993. This will have to, however, be gazetted as a further amendment to the regulations, and I'll talk a bit more about where those regulations are. So this was it's a great amendment because it's going to include many more children onto the grant. However, it does require more budget, and the minister did warn the committee that there would have to be a trade-off as a result of requiring more budget to extend this birth cut-off date. Another factor that led to us being very happy about this change is that there's a 15-year-old boy, Sibusiso Mashlangu, whose mother, Mrs. Mashlangu, has been, since 2005, spearheading a court case to try and get the grant extended to 18. Unfortunately, the court case got stuck in the courts and judgment was delayed, it's still delayed. And so Mrs. Mashlangu and Sibusiso have been waiting for many years for this extension. And Sibusiso's birthday is in August 1994. So this change in the cut-off date means that Sibusiso, who's been behind one of the court cases now, can also benefit from this grant. We were warned that there would be a trade-off, and I think the Finance Minister's budget speech shows where the trade-off has now been made. And it seems to be that the two main children's grants, so the foster child grant and the child support grant, are not going to be increased to keep pace with inflation. So, as you know, they were both given a very small increase, and inflation is about 6.4%, and both of these grants, their increase is below inflation. So that means that the caregivers will struggle to meet basic needs because while their cost of living have increased, the grant is not going to keep pace with that increase. And the problem with the below inflation increase is that it has a knock-on effect in the long term because it will ultimately impact on the grant's ability to keep pace with inflation over the years that follow. So it has a long-term impact. It also impacts negatively on the qualifying income threshold, because the qualifying income threshold has a formula which includes the grant amount. So if that grant amount doesn't keep pace with inflation, your qualifying income threshold also doesn't keep pace with inflation. So at the moment, you need to earn 2,400 Rand or less as a single parent to qualify for the grant. If the grant goes up to 250 Rand, it becomes 2,500 Rand per month. So you can see that as the amount shifts, so that income threshold also shifts. And that means that more people will come in if the income threshold goes higher. The one problem that we are facing is that the promised new regulations by the minister, which we call the third set, which promised the change of the birth date to include more children, those regulations haven't yet been promulgated, and maybe the department will be able to answer that question later. But the problem is that the trade-off has now been announced in the budget speech, so the promise of the increase around the birth date is not yet concrete in the law, but it looks like the trade-off is now quite set. So I think some key questions is, will these new regulations be promulgated? If yes, when? And we're already 2 months into the year, and we have also heard just this morning from SASSA that the officials have been informed that this birth date is going to be changed. And so probably at a service delivery level, we may even be having children coming onto the system, even though the law hasn't yet been amended. So that is good, but I think it's very important that the pressure should be put on that these regulations are actually promulgated. And also for Parliament to consider is whether you think this trade-off of not increasing the CSG to keep pace with inflation is acceptable to you, and also whether the CSG budget should be the place where the trade-off is made, or whether money should rather be taken from a budget that doesn't negatively affect children. If it is another budget that has to be taken from, which one? What we also have to look at is how will this below inflation increase impact on children and families now and in the future, and how many children will be positively affected by the changing birth date, to see whether the trade-off actually does benefit children if you balance the two against each other. The other area that we commenting on here is the school enrollment and attendance condition. Now, the draft regulations were quite punitive in the effect that they would punish the child and family by suspending the child support grant if the child was not in school. And this approach would have led to the most vulnerable children not only being deprived of their education, but also of their grant. And this is because children tend not to be in school because of what we call supply-side problems. It's not often a choice of the child or the parent, but it's often because the school can't actually accept the child or the child can't get to school. For instance, children with moderate disabilities are often turned away from school because the school can't accommodate them and special schools are very far away. So from our research, we found that a large amount of children who aren't in school are actually children with moderate disabilities. Another group of children not in school are children caring for sick parents, specifically parents with HIV, or children living far from school, or children in rural areas. So we are very happy that the final regulations have removed this punitive element, and instead they now require that non-attendance at school will actually invoke a supportive mechanism. So what will happen is that a social worker will visit the family to find out why is the child not in school and to provide the family with support that they need to ensure that the child can attend school. Now, as I said, there are many reasons why the child will not be in school, and it's often not by choice, and it's something that the family needs assistance with. And we learned that it wasn't Cabinet or the Minister's intention for this condition to be punitive. I think it was maybe a situation of the draft regulations needed to be gazetted for comment, and so they were put out, but it wasn't Cabinet's intention. Cabinet's intention was that a supportive mechanism must be invoked for the family. And from the Children's Institute side and the children's sector in general, we are quite happy to see the supportive mechanism, because when we were engaging with Parliament around the Children's Act, we were advocating for a mechanism to be built into the Children's Act that schools would identify vulnerable children and refer them to social services for assistance. But that section of the Children's Act was taken out mainly because the Education Department wasn't on board with it, and they weren't so happy about a law that was coming out of social development telling teachers what to do. So it's interesting that about 5 years later, the two departments have now come together and they have created this mechanism which will help identify vulnerable children and ensure that they get services. There are some challenges that lie ahead, however, with the condition. The problem is that the regulations aren't clear in a number of areas, and this can be addressed either by redrafting them to make them clearer, or if the department provides interpretive directives and basic communication materials that interpret the regulations. We are a bit worried from our previous experience when there's a lack of interpretive guidelines that officials tend to misinterpret the regulations, and the media as well, and the general public. I might be wrong here, and again we'll ask the department to input, but we haven't yet seen any basic communication materials that have been sent to officials. The NGOs like Black Sash and Access also haven't yet got these materials, and the public neither. It's also not on the department's website. So the problem is that us and our partners are continually phoned or asked by NGOs or caregivers, what do these regulations mean? And there are, because of the lack of clarity around certain areas, we can't really inform them yet. So the areas that we are a little bit worried about is Regulation 6.5 is quite clear. It says that when the only 1 month after approval of the child support grant must the caregiver send proof of school enrollment to SASA. It's very clear after approval, which makes it clear that it's not an eligibility requirement. So when the caregiver goes to apply for the grant, they don't have to take the school report. However, we have had reports from SASA officials, and we've even seen some of our partner NGOs interpret this regulation as saying that they have to bring the school report when they apply. And we're worried about this because due to the lack of capacity in the education system, many caregivers don't have school reports, or they struggle to get school reports. And if this becomes an eligibility requirement and holds up the approval of the grant, then caregivers won't be getting their child support grant timely. The minister answered this question on the 9th of February, and she said that it was not an eligibility requirement, that the only eligibility requirement for the CSG is that the child must be a vulnerable child and also qualify with the means test. We would like to see this kind of statement by the minister actually distributed to officials so that it's very clear that it's not an eligibility requirement. Another area that's a little bit unclear is that regulations require the primary caregiver to submit to the National Director General the child's recent school report every 6 months. And the minister's team told Parliament that this function could be delegated by the national DG, probably to the provincial DGs. And I think the question Parliament maybe wants to raise is, has this been delegated yet, and if yes, to what level? And from our side, we really need to know what address must caregivers send their school reports to and how must they do this. Normally, caregivers hand their documents in at the SASA office when they apply for the grant or when they go and get the grant, but now this new mechanism requires the reports to be sent to the national DG. So we're not clear how they, or what address, or where they must send these reports. Another area that requires clarity is that the South African Schools Act allows children aged 15 or in grade 9, whichever comes sooner, to leave school. In other words, it's not compulsory for these children to attend school. However, the child support grant regulations say that children who get in a grant and are aged 7 to 18 must be in school or another educational institution, for instance, an ACT college. We do need some clarity on how to interpret the clash between these two laws. Does this now mean that for children who are receiving a child support grant, schooling is compulsory until they're 18, but for children who are not receiving a child support grant, they can leave at 15? We would also suggest that Parliament monitor implementation of this area carefully, as conditions are new to South Africa and we can't really predict how it's going to impact on children's access to grants. And we can provide Parliament with reports from our partners like Black Station Access to have hotlines and paralegal officers to inform you of what's actually going on at the service delivery level with regards to this condition. On the 9th of February, the department's chief operation officer mentioned that the department was considering what's called an exception reporting system to enable the system to work more effectively. This would mean that instead of about 8 million caregivers having to submit score reports every 6 months to the DG, and the DG and VinMec having to actually sift through these 8 million score reports, the exception-based system would shift this to place the onus on the schools to send lists of children who are not attending to the national DG. And then the national DG and MinMec could then compare these lists from the schools to the SOCBIN database. And then they could do two things. The one is they'll be able to see if a child is getting a child support grant and isn't in school, they could then send a social worker. But similarly, they could also find children who are not attending school who are not getting the child support grant, who need a social worker to go and help them get the grant. So it would be a really good mechanism that would promote cooperation between the two departments. Another factor to consider why an exception-based reporting system would be better is that the majority of children in receipt of the child support grant are already attending school. We have very high school attendance rates in South Africa. And if you look at the other document we handed out on page 12, there are some statistics there that show you the numbers of children who are not attending school. And the estimate in 2007 was that there were probably only about 400,000 children who were not attending school. So you can see that it's the exception, not the norm, for children not to attend school. So a better administrative way of actually identifying these children would be exception-based reporting. So instead of 8 million report cards, you rather get lists of children, which will probably be 400,000, sent by education to the DG, and then those children could be attended to. Both these systems, the system of 8 million report cards as well as an exception-based system, requires very close cooperation between the Department of Education and the Department of Social Development. And it's, as I said before, it's very pleasing to see that this cooperation actually seems to be on the cards. And this will be good for children because more will be identified and referred for support. And it will also be good for schools because teachers often complain that they've got such big classes. They can't also be social workers. There's many vulnerable children in their classes which they can't cope with, and they're always looking for assistance from social workers to help them address the issues that these children are facing. So it's a win-win for both departments and for children. So we'd just like to thank the committee for the intervention that the committee made last year into this issue. And also to thank the department and the minister for actually listening to many of the concerns that we raised and for looking at the evidence and then adjusting the regulations so that they would be in the best interest of children. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I don't know whether your colleague would like to add anything. Ms. Chamberlain.
I would just like to reiterate the point around the trade-off. We haven't seen these regulations being promulgated yet. And we also have to ask some serious questions about, is this trade-off necessary? You've seen the figures that showed that inflation is sitting at 6.4% and that the child support grant has been increased only by 4%. This is the grant that helps keep children in school and protects them from things that we've seen like the global economic recession. The grant goes into household income and helps sustain that whole household, not just that individual child. These grants go to the poorest children in the poorest households in South Africa. Most of their expenditure is on food, fuel, and transport. They have been the hardest hit by the current economic downturn and the global recession. And the cost, the estimated cost of extending the grant by an extra R5 to keep pace with inflation is approximately 600 million rand. It's not a great amount of money. So we really have to question whether or not we're really pleased that the grant has been extended to include all 18-year-olds, but we really need to ask if the long-term impact of cutting the grant in real terms is worth that trade-off, and we don't think it's necessary. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Jamieson, Ms. Proudlaw. Could I get some questions for clarity from the members? Honourable Member Magagula.
Yes, thank you, Chairperson. Actually, I just want to be with you to the presentation that you laid. It is very clear that this government care for the people. You'll check if the committee felt that the children can start in January 1994, but because of we have to depend on treasurers and the other things, and then it ended up being in April. But you'll see that no, rather than to go gradually, we said, no, let's go to April. And then I think also that can be considered that this, at least this parliament and this government, they are doing, they are in line to support. We knew that, like a child, Sibusiso, I want to see him when I'm collecting the memorandum. But what we knew is that, no, the organizations like Black Sash and the like, they'll go outside and scout the other one so that they can bring the government to court again because of maybe there is this space that we had between January to April. So we knew that those children has been left behind. But if you can check, this government is in line. According to the children 18 and at school. Indeed, we can't run away that we said the grant must be get by the children from when he's born until 18. We can't run away from that. That is things is legislated. But, you know, we look because we are building the nation here. It's not just we giving them money, but we are building the nation. We want them to go to school and learn. So the other things we said, no, yes, they qualify. Yes, the grant is belong to them because they have an ID or they have the South African documentation. And in terms of age, they qualify. But also we said, no, because we are building the nation, we agreed that, no, that all children of South Africa must go to school. And then, but actually we can't. Maybe we'll check how can we go to. We can't punish a person by not giving him or her grant because he didn't go to school because of a certain problem or circumstances. But what we're going to, what we feel that it must be doing, indeed, you've spoken very correct that there is a social worker. And social workers must know why did that children didn't go to didn't attend school, and then that will give us the answer. All in all, I said no. The government is in power. We are going far. We are going far if we do things like this. I think this government is really care for the people. I think.
Honourable Member, I just want to get Honourable Member Makuba. Are you also interested in asking a question? Okay. Honourable Member Dudley. Honourable Member Gava. Are you fine? Okay. Adams? You fine? Presentation. I don't know, but as I'm sitting here listening to your concerns, I would like to reiterate that CSG is not the only help that these children get from the state. We must also remember that, and we must bear in mind, that we have nutritional programs at school, which
also helps the children, and it really helps the children in the rural and remote rural areas a lot. And I bear witness to that. These children have free schooling. They do not pay school fees. They have free schooling. They have free transport. My only concern is the rural and remote rural areas where our Department of Education need to extend the transport system for those children, because that is where the problem is. Every now and then we have projects of school uniforms, and these school uniforms also go to the poorest of the poor or to the most needy children. Food parcels are distributed on a regular basis, and every now and then I go to social development and see if I can't find a food parcel where I know that the grant could not be sufficient or are not sufficient for the whole month for the family. Subsidized housing must also be included, because most of these children in these families are part and parcel of subsidized housing from the department, from the government. And here the indigenous policy helps these households to really keep on or go on with their lives. So I think we must definitely bear in mind that though it has been an increase of 4%, there are other benefits that contribute to the well-being, though not enough, although not sufficient for these children or the families to have the type of life that we would all want them to have. Thank you. Madam Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson. I would also like to thank the Children's Institute for the presentation that they've done. Most of the things I wanted to say, Honorable Lamula has already said, but I just wanted to say to our presenters here that looking at the presentation and understanding that the challenges that they have noted, some of those challenges we had noted too, and we did raise a concern about them, and the department has given answers to us. Like, it's good that they also know that the minister actually gave us some information early this month, and maybe we just have to wait and see and do the monitoring, but like you suggested, to see if all this will be effective and be done according to what is stated. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for the presentation. Just want to check that we're understanding you correctly. So you are satisfied at the moment with the explanation around the phrasing of the clause within the regulation to do with the extension. And then you're satisfied with the explanation around it no longer being a condition, but it would get an intervention by social development. So it's just this whole thing of the trade-off and the underinflation increase. Just to check if we're getting the right message. Thanks.
I think I want to echo what the other honourable members are saying in terms of the presentation. I think it's a very critical presentation, which is good, because I especially I think the analysis around the trade-offs gives us a good picture of the increase. I think the issue that we raised with the minister the last time and the department, I don't know whether they are in a position to respond to some of these issues. We haven't invited them for this purpose, but they are here now for the other meeting, the agenda item we're going to have, is precisely in terms of the improving the efficiency of the system, seeing that cleaning up the system from time to time, but also making it more efficient. Those that have to, that are graduating out of the system, do so in time, in terms of the law, and people that are applied, they get on board as they're supposed to. With the cleaning up, and I think that the one big challenge that people used to have with the foster care grant was the high turnover of the social workers in the area. So you would have a social worker and then you'd have a 3 month vacancy term, and then you have a new social worker coming in, so your files pile up and your caseloads are there. So those are one of the challenges in terms of your foster care backlog. But I think the briefing that we got is that Social Security is getting on with the backlog. But I think I would like the SASA just to comment on the efficiency issues raised in the presentation, especially the liaison between the Department of Education and SASA. The issue that, in terms of the South African Schools Act, allows children 15 or in grade 9 to leave school. I think that is when it's also in terms of if my memory serves me right, in terms of your free schooling, if I'm correct, and how does that provision in the South African Schools Act relate to the regulation that has been published. And I think otherwise, if there is that void in the law, then it's an area of engagement for the committee to speak to the other honourable members in the portfolio committee, and then also to in terms of an area of engagement with the minister to how are you going to approach that. Although I don't think, in my opinion, that it is something that can be managed. We've asked SASA to come and talk to us about the communication plan. How they're going to roll it out, but especially also the media campaign and awareness campaign. Because as members of this committee, we all have constituencies. So if we were to be satisfied that there's one message going out, and I think you also touched on that, and so even your internal communication and your external communication, that your underlying message should be the same. And I think we agree with that. But we said that as a committee, we are very interested in your external communication. I think the issue is if the acting CEO would endorse the committee in terms of your communication to your staff on the new date for the CSG application. That's the 1st of December 1993. If you could comment on that in terms of how you communicated internally to your official, for that matter, when it comes to the application of the grant. Yeah, and then and some other issues that you would like to comment on before we can maybe summarize, before we give over to the Children's Institute just to conclude.
As a chairperson, honorable members, I just want to make a few comments. Around the presentation itself. I think generally some of the issues we raised with the committee last time have been covered by the Children's Institute. Chairperson, we all agree that there will be benefits of implementing the new regulation. For us specifically, we're also looking at cleaning up the system, because if we do get the list or the report, as it is indicated in the regulation, we'll be able also to verify the children that are currently paid from SOCBEN that they're indeed existing, and there are further benefits, of course, of ensuring that they are indeed attending school and that they are also getting other welfare benefits when social workers do visit those households. We have communicated to all our staff around the issue of the cut-off date. We send a circular to all the staff, but given that we are a huge institution, it might as well be that there are certain areas where they might still have staff might still have some confusion around this, and we will be dealing with those areas directly as and when we get those complaints sent, especially to our regional offices. When it comes to the modus operandi around the different roles of departments, I think we did mention also a thing at the last meeting with the committee that the minister is engaging or will be engaging the MECs around this issue, as well as the DG will engage his counterparts in the provinces to look into the best way of dealing with managing the report. However, we as FASA do have a registry system for purposes of filing our records of all the beneficiaries that are in the system. We will be able or will be in a position to forward or provide that kind of information both to the Department of Social Development as well as the Department of Education. I think in line with what the CEO of the department as well said, we will be able to ensure that exception reports are prepared. We are also looking at possibility of interfacing systems, that is SOCBEN and other systems with the Department of Education to ensure that this thing is effective. Clearly, Chair, it's a new system and it's got to have its own teething problems. We will be working on refining this. There's a task team that we have put in place between ourselves, Department and Education, to look into this matter further so that we deal with all those teething problems as they emerge. Thank you very much.
Ms. Proudler.
Honourable Member Magagula and Lamula both talked about the, you know, the fact that government actually has a package of services for children, and that is very true in that there's quite a comprehensive package of health, education, nutrition benefits for poor families, and this package in design is actually very good. But at an implementation level, it doesn't always reach or link up poor families. And why we don't drop the ball with the child support grant is that the South Africa is a cash-based economy, and so for caregivers to access many of these benefits that the state provides, they need to pay for transport to get there. And without that cash, they often can't access many of the services. Now, we take, for instance, the new provision for ARVs for HIV-positive babies on diagnosis. So that's a great new step that the health department has taken. They've said that upon diagnosis of HIV-positive babies, they must immediately be put on ARVs, and you don't have to wait for their CD4 count to get so bad that they nearly almost at death's door. So that's a great new improvement. It's going to cost about, I think it's about 3 billion rand extra to actually provide that for HIV-positive babies. But for caregivers, that means they have to go to the clinic more often. So and the queues at the clinics are going to be much longer now because of the strain on the health system. So they're going to have to take time off work if they do have any work of an informal kind. They're going to have to stand in the queue, and they're going to have to go a number of times, which they'll have to pay transport for. So that's why we always emphasize the need to watch the CSG, make sure that families are getting enough cash that they can benefit from these many other programs that the state is providing. And we would also agree with Honourable Member Lamula that we need to work on the transport issue, because it is the one area where we do see that children are not really getting subsidised transport, and so they're using, the families are using the child support grant to pay to get everywhere, and it doesn't really stretch that far if you have to pay for transport and food and school uniforms and textbooks and, you know, everything else that is needed. And Honourable Member Dudley's question around what are we happy about and not happy about is that in general we are pleased with the third set of regulations which changed that cut-off date to 31st December 1993, very happy with that. And we're also happy that the condition has been made supportive and not punitive. We are worried about the trade-off. Because, for instance, of this example I've given you of the ARVs, where if we want to maximize the other benefits that the state is providing for children, we need to make sure that families have enough cash to get to all those benefits.
Yes, John, and then are you going to conclude?
Yeah, thanks, Jay. I think I may just need to clear up something around what is perceived to be a trade-off of a significant nature, and that is that the CSG increased only by 4%. I think in the discussions between the Treasury and National Department, there was agreement on two issues. One is that we need to look at the efficiencies so that we reduce leakage in the system, and that would enable government by mid-year, that is with the adjustment estimate, to re-look at the value or the increase rate on the CSG. To that effect, I should point out one is if we had used a 6.2% increase, it would have given a benefit increase of 14 Rand. Now, as a rule, the increase is always rounded off, as the chair I'm sure will know very well, because of the payment system in provinces. Therefore, a full 6.2% would have given a not a round figure. But the intention is to increase the grant by another 10 Rand in October, so that on average, the increase for the year would be 6.2% in line with the rate of inflation. So although the Minister of Finance has indicated that the increment is moderate, it does not mean that overall children would be adversely affected by the real decrease in the value of the grant. I think it's important to point that out. Another one to point out, there isn't a trade-off in respect of the extending the grant and the decrease or no real increase in the value of the foster care grant. I should, for the record, point out that there are incentive effects as a result of the high level of the foster care grant compared to the child support grant. So the increases in respect of the foster child grant going forward, members need to expect that it will continue to be below inflation. In a very subtle way, government would rather want in the long term to get the child support grant to increase at a faster rate. So that people do not sit with this choice, do I go for a foster care grant and or foster care grant. In reality, we'll be at a very slow pace, begin to close the big gap that currently exists between the two. In respect of the fact that the regulations are not yet promulgated, I think we need to point out that no children will be adversely affected if they had already applied. Once the regulations come through, those applications in the system will be dealt with on a retrospective basis so that, again, the children will not lose out. I think those were key points raised by it, but I should also just indicate that the delay in the regulations is as a result of final consultations, but also the minister's busy schedule. We spent last weekend doing strategic planning so that we can ensure that the portfolio committee gets it on time. In between, the minister has been traveling, but the promulgation of it is imminent, whilst no child will be adversely affected by it. Thank you, Chair.
For that, is it Mr. Jahoma, Mrs. Jameson?
I'd just like to remind the committee, and thank you very much for your comments and questions. The Minister of Finance in 2008, when he introduced a phased increase to the child support grant, promised that we would see inflationary-related increases to the child support grant over time. And one of the reasons that they wanted to do that is, as Mr. Jahoma has just pointed out, to ensure that the CSG was actually beginning to be a real grant of choice rather than foster child grant. But what we've just seen in this budget is that the foster child grant has been increased by more than the child support grant. That is not going to cut the gap between the two. It's going to increase the gap between the two. And
Back to Honourable Lamola's point about the package of measures. One of the things is that the child support grant acts as a gateway so that when caregivers and children become eligible for the child support grant, they become eligible to a range of other measures, such as the school fee exemption. When you do not increase the child support grant, the means test also does not increase. And what does that mean? It means that less families and less children become eligible for the grant. So not only are you cutting the number of families that get the grant, but you're narrowing the gateway to that other range of support packages. So that's one of the reasons we think it is incredibly important that the child support grant keeps pace with inflation. One, it should be competing with the other grants. Two, it should be available to the same number of children that get it today. The other thing is, remember that the grant is 250 rand a month. Think about your own children and grandchildren. How much does it cost to look after a child? 250 rand does not cover the cost of raising a child, not even close. It's the best that we can do to support really poor families who are struggling to make ends meet. And it's incredibly important that we see that in the longer term, the impact of that grant is maintained. So as we've seen in past years, it is possible to do a review in October and add an increase. That would certainly mitigate the long-term effects of not increasing the grant now. So at the end of the financial year, if there was a 10 rand increase now and a 5 rand increase in October, you'd still have an overall increase. But it's not a commitment. This is the first time we've heard of this. The Minister of Finance didn't raise that in his budget speech and didn't promise that. So it hasn't yet been costed or included in the budget. So if you did want to look at that as an option, you'd have to make that as a recommendation in your report on the budget. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mrs. Jameson and Mrs. Proudlock, for your presentation and your remarks. Also, honourable members, for the questions and the statements you made. This is indeed one process that the committee will be following closely. The issue of socioeconomic rights is very important for us. I think it's a matter that is very close to our hearts, as well as the issue around children's rights, which is also linked to socioeconomic rights. The issue of rights versus responsibility is also something that the committee grapples with all the time. So we'll be watching in terms of the implementation of the CSG extension, as well as the beneficiaries of the grant, whether they have, they are acting responsibly in terms of their responsibilities as citizens, whether they are spending the money the way it's supposed to be spent. But thank you very much for the, especially the Children's Institute, for the coming to the committee, contacting us, having this engagement with us in terms of this very critical issue that affects the lives of our children. Thank you very much. Members, would you like to have a 5-minute break?